This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink. Drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, Kenya Barris has a resume as a TV writer and producer going back 20 years. He was a creator of America's Next Top Model. But he came on the radar for most of us with Black-ish. When it premiered on ABC in 2014, it was the first major network show centered on the life of a Black family in almost a decade. On the one hand, it's a classic sitcom, the bickering family, the middle-aged dad out of touch with his kids. You know the story. But the fun is in the execution. Now, Black-ish also does something we haven't really seen on a sitcom in a long time, which is to be totally open about the issues that Black families in America face in real life. And Kenya Barris, like the best successful TV writers, gets a lot of his material from his own life. So, Kenya, welcome. And I wanted to first begin by getting a sense of the origins of the show. How is Black-ish your story?
Well, it really happened. My wife's name is Rainbow. She's a biracial anesthesiologist, you know, hippie kid. Her mom was a hypnotherapist, and they kind of grew up like differently than I did. And my mom was, you know, sort of a self-made, bootstrapping kind of hustler from the hood, along with my dad. So we kind of came from the hood. My wife came from different places, but we both came from definitely meager financial beginnings. And I looked up at the version of what I remember being a little Black kid was, and that's not the kids that I was raising. They were sort of a hybrid, watered down version of what my notion of being a Black kid were. They were sort of Black-ish in that way. But then I looked at all their friends, who were mostly because of the schools and things that, you know, my wife's now a doctor and I'm a writer at the time. You know, the schools that they were going to, a lot of their kids were not African American. They weren't, you know, completely white kids. They had a little Black in all of them. So they were sort of Black-ish. And I realized that youth culture was this homogenization of everything. You know what I'm saying? It was like they were all Black-ish. And I felt like I started feeling like a dinosaur myself, and that's where the character of Dre came from. You know, we've all been taught to give your kids more than you've got than you had. But in doing that, what do they lose in the sort of transition? And that's sort of what the conceit of the show was.
Did the title come right away? Because the title is genius, and I know some people have objected to it and they made a little anxious by it, but it's just as good a title as The Honeymooners.
Yeah, I mean, I really love the title. The other title that I liked was Black is the New Black. and, you know, I threw out Black-ish to the network and studio, and they kind of raised their eyebrows. And, you know, they got it, and they laughed, but they were like, it's going to – and when the show launched, it really was like, oh, my God, is this going to be the end of me? Is this going to be the thing that – and people did respond negatively to it. A lot of people did respond negatively.
Who exactly? Was there a type of person that responded negatively?
I think a lot of people in the Black community in particular. You know, yeah. Donald Trump didn't actually like the name of the show. He actually tweeted about it. But,
I think that must have disappointed you immensely.
Yes, I was so sad. I think a lot of white people felt like – well, the thing I heard from white people was if we named a show Whitish, that would be so racist. And, you know, my response to that is the show name Whitish is Friends, you know what I'm saying, or is Seinfeld. And I think Black people that responded to it felt like so often we had been duped with, you know, a promise of something that delivered something that was coonish or a complete stereotype. And they felt like, here it is. And the thing that I told people is that I could have named it the Johnsons or New in Town or whatever. but I felt like I wanted you to know when you sat down that you were seeing something that you had not seen before.
So season three just premiered. And the first episode is about a family trip to Disneyland. And Dre goes and buys the whole family VIP passes, which is a great bougie move. But,
right.
But then the passes expire and the kids complain. And the whole trip loses its allure for a moment. Let's listen to a clip from it.
Most people die climbing Everest. We're going to die waiting to ride it.
I hate my life right now.
I hate my dad right now.
Are you kidding me? Huh? You wait in one line and you have a meltdown? You had an incredible day. You got to ride like 20 rides in 10 minutes. You got to go ahead of Green Day. Did you see the puss on Trey Cool? Huh? And you know what's worse? Not one person has even said thank you.
Gee, thanks, Dad.
Shut up! Not sincere. You monsters are dead to me!
That actually happened to me.
You poor thing.
I know. It happened to me, not in that aspect. I mean, growing up, going into Disneyland for me was like, I might as well have gone to Paris because it was such a... You know, it was such an expense, you know, and my parents made a big, big deal of it. And when I went, you know, a few years ago, I took my kids to Disneyland and trying to sort of give them more than I had, I got, you know, I was like, I really want to go. And I got caught up in the moment. I really want to go all out. So I went and got, they have these tour guides and I got the tour guides. And tour guides are an arm and a leg, but they walk you around the park and you can go to the front of most lines.
Are the tour guides dressed as Snow White and Dumbo and all that?
No, they're dressed just as, they're dressed like in a plaid sort of, they're dressed as, it's called cast members, Disney cast, like a plaid vest with a blue tie, and they look very...
Disturbing.
but they would walk us up to the lines and like, we went on like 10 rides and then one, you know, we got to like Pirates of the Caribbean and they're like, this one we can't do for whatever reason. And my kids, it had been like an hour and a half. And my kids, the first time they've ever had this experience, are like, oh, we have to wait. And I lost my mind. I was like, this is not real life. This is not real life. Like, and I realized that this was my fault, that I had put them into this. I had taken away what Disneyland was about. Disneyland was about waiting in the lines. Disneyland is about family. Disneyland is about being together. And I had made it about, you know, the VIP experience and taken, and I was like, this was a real lesson for me.
So it was your own damn fault.
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, maybe they'll forgive you one day.
I don't care if they do or not.
You recently told a reporter that you don't want to talk about diversity anymore. Mm-hmm. Why not? You're just on too many panels, or are we at a place where we don't need to have these conversations anymore?
No, in this particular like a situation like this, I wouldn't mind talking about it. I wouldn't mind talking about it in general. But it was... our fourth TCA, because we did one for the pilot, it was our fourth TCA.
TCA.
And it was the Television Critics Association,
okay.
You know, event. And we, you know, were coming out and it was like, I was so happy because it was a year we had got nominated for an Emmy. We had had a lot, you know, a lot of people had said really good things about the show. People knew the characters now. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this reporter started to ask questions about what's the demographic in this. And I was like, none of this has anything to do with the show. Like, can you talk about, no one had talked about the Emmy nominations, the great work that the actors had done, the great directing work that had been done, the writing work that had been done. And I kind of lost it. I kind of was embarrassed. But I felt like this to me is clouding the narrative of when you start to only want to talk about the niche thing and not the work being done. And I know people are like, well, how are you going to say that you have a show called Blackish? That doesn't mean that for the rest of the show, that's all I want to talk about. Like that, oh my God, they're just like us. They're black and they can write words and they understand the music syncs up to the lips and the sound works. I feel like at a certain point, let's talk about the actual work because the next generation coming behind me wants to talk about the work too. I don't want to ever run away from the diversity conversation in general. I am proud to be sort of a part of that, you know, that pack that is in this diversity conversation, and I wouldn't be where I were today if it wasn't for diversity.
Do you feel the hot breath of the next generation behind you? Are you already starting to feel the impact on television of Black-ish and things like it?
Without sounding, you know, in any way, shape, or form, like trying to sound arrogant, yeah, I think so. I think so. I think that there are things that feel derivative of the opportunity that ABC allowed us to do and the success that we've gotten. I think that there is the notion of like, oh, well, let's do this family and let's do that family and let's do this show. Let's have, you know, every voice now sort of feels like people now know that there is a place in the mainstream for unique voices.
What credit do you think historically and in the moment does Shonda Rhimes, should she get for this forward movement in television?
The godmother.
Because the gap between ABC and its competitors on this question is, it seems to me, immense.
I feel in this particular time, I'll say Yvette Lee Bowser's the queen. She was the first African-American woman to have, or maybe African-American period, to have a network, primetime network television show. She's ran taken three different shows to syndication. She's now running Dear White People on Netflix. She worked with me for the last couple of years. She's a great, great writer. She was one of the first people to sort of break that into the mainstream in that way. And I think if she was the godmother, then Shonda's the queen, because she really, coined the word, I believe, almost in colorless casting. And, you know, I look at her and she's broken every single boundary there ever was.
Do you think the other networks and the other cable networks have gotten the hint?
Yes, I do. I think that cable is in a much better place, you know, in terms of perception than network. But I think the thing that I got from Shonda is that I still truly, truly, truly believe in network. I believe that ABC Studios and ABC Network have given me a mic to let the world sort of know that there is a different voice out there and doesn't have to be a watered-down voice. At the same time, we are able to reach 7, 8, 9, 10 million people sometime with our message. And there's still profit to our show. We still can actually form a profit base to do and become other things.
And in a way, the stakes are higher because of the number of people who are still watching the traditional networks. And you have an episode that Emily Nussbaum, in her profile of you in The New Yorker, and other critics too, have pointed out that there's a particular episode, it's called Hope, that maybe more than any episode on Black-ish or any episode of anything on television took on race head-on, and particularly the business of police brutality. Let's hear a clip first from Hope, which is an amazing episode of television.
The system is rigged against us.
Maybe it is, Dre, but I don't want to feel like my kids are living in a world that is so flawed that they can't have any hope.
Oh, so you want to talk about hope, Bo? Obama ran on hope. Remember when he got elected? And we felt like maybe, just maybe, we got out of that bad place and made it to a good place. That the whole country was really ready to turn the corner. You remember that amazing feeling we had during the inauguration? I was sitting right next to you. And we were so proud. And we saw him get out of that limo and walk alongside of it and wave to that crowd. Tell me you weren't terrified when you saw that. Tell me you weren't worried that someone was going to snatch that hope away from us like they always do.
Kenya, we're coming to the end of the Obama presidency. We may be even facing the possibility of a Trump presidency. And even if he loses to Hillary Clinton, Trumpism has unleashed talk and demagogy that we have not heard in this country on such a big stage in quite a long time. And where are you in your thinking about the Obama presidency and what's ahead for this issue and how it may affect Black-ish?
I mean, it's going to affect the family and just our world in a monstrous way. We have an episode on voting this year that kind of deals with Dre lamenting the loss of Barack. The good thing that I feel like Donald Trump has brought about is that he has unearthed what was already there in this country. And it's the divisive nature of who we really truly are. People had thought, well, we had a black president, that we're past that, we're not. And I think that's the kind of thing that sometimes you need a little bit of a shakeup. And this goes to both sides, left and right, and black people and white people. I think the thing that we are not doing is we are not having communication. We're not talking. And there is a huge amount of conversations that need to be had still.
Kenya, thank you so much.
Thank you, man. This is awesome.
Writer and producer Kenya Barris, the creator of ABC's Black-ish.